welcome to this week's episode of Outside the Panels, where we will be reviewing Ram V's work on Justice League Dark, Catwoman, and Swamp Thing. These are some really exciting runs that he's worked on. So without further ado, this is Outside the Panels with
Poder
and
Chad Simons.
And of course me, Synesthetic or Jack Pruitt, whatever you prefer. So let's dive right in. What did you guys think about Justice League Dark?
Well, these are kind of short runs. James Tynion was running this book for a while, for like 2 years, and kind of brought Ram V in. And I really enjoyed Tynion's work on Justice League Dark. Might have been one of my favorite Tynion books, but it was also kind of like reading a novel every time. Like, it would take me 45 minutes to finish an issue. And I feel like he captured building the team dynamic really well, but not the characters themselves personally. And I feel like with Ram's run, it's a lot lighter. There's more humor. And Swamp Thing seems like, I really like Ram's take on Swamp Thing, which we'll get into a little bit later. And his take on Zatanna, I can just tell Ram loves that character. And with his whole like Zatara quest that Zatara laid out for them in these issues. We are covering, by the way, Justice League Dark 24 through 28, where Ram V is the solo writer. He did do a 4-issue arc before that with James Tynion about Animal Man and the Red. But we wanted to focus on the Ram V, basically controlled and written, well, controlled by editorial, but written by Ram. And I found that it's definitely lighter. And I love the kind of new introductions to how he seems to be crafting Swamp Thing in the future, the Endometrisis, I believe it's called, where he's connected to kind of all of the avatars of the green through all time. They're basically molecules.
Well, it sounded like endometriosis, so I'm glad that Swamp Thing doesn't have that, because that sounds painful and wouldn't make too much sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking, too. But also, in a way, he kind of does, because it's not just a blending of the green. He has elements of the
endosymbiote. I'm way off. It's endosymbiosis.
Yeah, it's a combination of the green, the red, and even a little bit of the gray, that fungal nastiness that they've always battled. But working in concert with each other provides sort of the solution they need to take down this big bad enemy, which was kind of cool that even these opposing forces need to come together to battle something so hideous as
definitely
the Upside Down Man.
And connecting him even more with what it looks like he's going to do a Swamp Thing in the future. I always knew he's the avatar of the green, but now he's like a vessel full of molecules of the Parliament, the red, the green, and kind of all surrounding the elements of nature, as you said, animals, you know, every part of the natural world, which is really interesting. And Swamp Thing's talks, the way he talks when Ram V writes him is great. It reminds me of the Swamp Thing books I grew up with, where he wasn't just talking like Alan Moore and being weird like Alan Moore. It's kind of a thing going on, but I just really dig his take on that, and definitely dig Man-Bat, Scientist Man-Bat's interactions with them, and they're a lot of the fun of the series, as are some of the stunning art pieces done when they do the endosymbiosis and kind of show what it looks like with the roots going through all these different universes and molecules. I gotta shout it out to artists, I don't want to mispronounce this, Amake Nihualapan and Jun Chung, the colorists. They're doing a great job, and Rob Lee's letters are also great on this run.
Yeah, I really liked, because you're right, the earlier Justice League Dark, I enjoyed, but felt dense. Like, every issue, he was building a bigger part of this world. He was adding another element to the spell. They were tracing this path that Zatanna's dad had walked in an effort to save him while accidentally unleashing these forces and then having to battle it back. So that transition arc, sort of where they co-wrote together, I think was a good handing of the torch. And then to think that he wrote these four issues that we're talking about that tie up all of these elements from before, but is way looser and way easier and accessible to jump right into, is pretty impressive for him as a writer, I think. Like, that just shows, like, a real talent for storytelling. Even when he didn't start the story, he can end it successfully and satisfyingly from somebody else's sort of start. And I think you kind of need that skill to survive in the big two environment of DC and Marvel, because for the most part, you're always going to be coming on after somebody else, and you're always going to be tugging at a thread somebody's left hanging to tie it up, or I guess sometimes you could just cut it loose. But I thought that this was a very well done example of somebody having to come in, close a story while telling their own story, because yeah, all the characters in it are awesome. It feels light. Everybody's kind of fun and joking with each other.
It's almost more entertaining, yeah, and than dreary. Like, I liked Tynion's run, but it wasn't very comedic, where I feel like this has a lot of energy. Like I said, James did a very good job of building this team dynamic. I still don't feel like Wonder Woman fits in, even though she was like kind of the main arc of James' run with Hecate, which were kind of my least favorite parts of that run. It seems like Ramby might be pushing her out sooner than later. I don't know. I just have an idea. Because I think when it comes back after Future State, there'll be a lot, you know, a bigger difference in the team and everything. But I agree. It's nice that he finishes James' pitch and we got rid of Upside Down Man and did it in a really fun, entertaining, almost, like, I don't like fetch quests, but this was a fun fetch quest with Zatanna having to follow her father's notes and then get to the basically secret and challenge of how to defeat Upside Down Man, and that is belief, that, you know, which is like the role of the observer in quantum mechanics, that if you believe in something, you can make it true, which kind of comes to the Upside Man's downfall.
Yeah. I also thought that it was a fun little meta piece to the story that they all realize that they've been walking the path that Giovanni, Zatanna's dad, Zatara, has been laid out for them. And I thought that that was sort of the him saying that James previously had sort of laid out, oh, this is sort of the beats that I want to reach for this conclusion. But, like, you do your own thing. But they still end up, it felt like when John was like, this all just been part of his big plan, was sort of Ram realizing, like, oh man, this is all part of James's big plan. Well, let's just take it to the end. But we got to talk real fast about Upside Down Man's. First, his regular design is gross. Like, he's scaly. Nasty. There's no eyes. He looks like one of those, like, weird, like, sucker fish, like, leech monster thingies. Like, the kind that just would rear up and, like, I don't know, jump on you, kind of.
Very alien. It's, like, really hard to place what yeah. he resembles. Like, I know that there's something there that it's, you're, like, connecting to in my head, but I don't know what.
It reminds me of, like, with a pale, like, reptilian crocodile body, but not the crocodile face, and just with those, like, jagged shark teeth, like, almost like a shark demon without any fins, just because of how his teeth are laid out and the fact that he's always hanging upside down to be that reflection yeah. of Hecate. I know what you guys are going to talk about, that when he finally gets messed up in this and he has, you know, what happens? I know you guys are really excited to talk about it.
No, you go for it, Jack.
All right, so he gets pretty fucked up and then he goes full-blown Donzo and opens up, like, 20 Sharingans all over his body, is what it looks like to any Naruto fans yeah. out there.
But we saw him with gross. No eyes at all, and then all of a sudden he's just a mass of opening eyes, which,
like, dark red.
Yeah. Boy, and I thought too, all of those lumps, we were just describing them as, like, reptilian and sort of, like, crocodile-esque. Like, that he would be scaly because he's so lumpy.
Yeah.
But did you think now, like, all of those are just closed eyes? That he's just, like, a mass of eyes and a big feasting mouth?
He almost looked like a humanoid shawarma at first.
Yeah. Oh, and he always looked wet, too.
It's okay, I think what I'm placing there is, like, there's Lovecraftian elements, but he also reminded me of some sort of Silent Hill creature when the... At one
okay.
point, they have, like, they're, like, the white creatures, but with, like, no face, or, like, just the mouth. There are some creatures like that in one of the Silent Hill games.
No, I agree. It's not definitely... I think a book we'll talk about later in the show, not today, has more Lovecraftian elements in the creatures, but definitely just that kind of underworld dimension laying, which I know, Jack... You missed out on in the earlier run is basically Hecate made this deal and her evil reflection is upside down man. So he's upside down and she's like the moon goddess witch who lies below him and her power is transferred into Wonder Woman. And that's why Wonder Woman gets all pale white and has like the three moons on her head.
Okay. That's pretty cool there.
Overall, I liked this little bit, and it comes to a nice natural conclusion before they jump forward into future state. But all the characters I thought were super well written. There's a real satisfying emotional payoff. Even if you're just reading these four, I feel like it's still pretty satisfying as long as you're somewhat familiar with the DC universe and you know some of the characters like Constantine or a little bit of their history as that goes with the bigger event stuff. But it's pretty cool. Everybody kind of gets a happy ending out of it, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I hope in the return we get the Constantine, our real more versed Constantine. I think they kind of tame him down for the not black label, but in just reading Spurrier's run in this week's issue of Justice League Dark, it's such a big transition. By the way, Cy Spurrier's Hellblazer run is perfect. We'll talk about that maybe at the end of the show of other books we read recently. But, yeah, it's really fun. Bobo, you know, Detective Chimp is a lot of fun in it. And Man-Bat has been fun since Tinian's run. And just seeing Swamp Thing kind of being this, you know, eternal avatar and really kind of do it in a demanding presence was great. And kind of what it leaves the hint at the end of this arc is what I think leads into a little bit of what Legend of Swamp Thing, which we'll be talking about last, which is fantastic. But overall, I think he's a great writer for this book. I think we're going to have a lot more adventurous fun with the team in the future, and we'll get to stop dealing with so much of the witching hour and Hecate stuff, which is great. That he can kind of, when he comes back, do his own tale and put his own spin on it. But for the four he did, he definitely did a great job and definitely wrote Zatanna, Swamp Thing, and Detective Chimp in ways that I appreciate, ways that I enjoy the characters.
What I really enjoyed with Detective 8 was, I don't think it's given much away, because obviously they save the world, but he goes... at one point when he goes, I don't know what saving the world means, but I get to be a shitty bartender and sometimes watch people smile. So maybe that's what saving the world means.
Yeah. Maybe saving the world was inside us all along.
for being a detective ape with a magical sword, he's surprisingly down to earth.
Yeah. Which is interesting because, yeah, the makeup of the team is so extraordinary. And even him, a talking chimp with a magic sword who has great detective skills, is, like, the most human.
Yeah, that's got, like, an Umbrella Company vibe, almost. Or Umbrella Academy.
Yeah. One final thought that I gotta ask before we move on. Did you think that Upside Down Man would be more or less terrifying if he didn't have those tight black pants on? If he was just one, like, and I'm talking like Ken doll
like
style.
A dong slinging out?
No. He's not Thunder Gun in it, but it's just like Ken doll style. He's just one long, lean, gray mass instead of wearing clothes. Would you be more scared or less scared?
I think I'd be more scared. I'm also curious that why he's wearing pants in the first place.
Because the world is upside down. We only wear... Oh, no, I guess, no, it's no pants, no shirt. No, no shirt, no shoes, no service. But upside down, no pants, no go. I don't know.
No pants, no go. In the time of, like, Amazonians and Hecate,
yeah,
I don't think there was pants.
You know what? Yeah, I was going to say it's mostly skirts, probably.
It's probably
skirts,
yeah,
dresses.
There's
probably pants, though, too. Let's be fair.
He just decided to shop in the upside down version of the Gap to get some nice fitting black jeans to make him look slick and gothic.
Yeah.
You know, catch all those gazes. Well,
I mean, it worked. I was thinking about him.
It's just the element of confusion. They're like,
we all would have swiped right on upside down man.
Well, let's not go that far. He doesn't have eyes. If I can't see into those soulful wells, I don't know.
I don't know. I definitely would have swiped left after he awakened his Sharingan.
Yeah, I'm out.
His Sharingan. Yeah, is.
It's pretty fucking gross.
Then once again, the art is great in that. I'm not too familiar with that artist. I wonder. Oh, Khalid. Also, I want to mention Khalid has a lot of great character development in this. Bringing him back as Dr. Fate is good, and taking over for Kent again, which is nice.
Yeah.
To have an Indian-born character who lived in London in his run, which was from 6 years ago now.
Something like that. Yeah. But that was pretty cool. Really making lemons out of Dr. Fate's... Or making lemonade out of the convoluted history that is Dr. Fate's wearers and helms. Like,
yeah.
A cool way to make it relevant while developing his character, like you're saying.
I liked when he was speaking... I don't know if this is a normal thing for Dr. Fate, but I liked when he was speaking and instead of text, there was just like hieroglyphs.
Yeah. He's an Egyptian, like, god contained inside his helm, and different people wear it. So, like, Kent, who was the older man with Khalid, wore it for the longest, and then he eventually no longer wore it because he died, but then he came back to life because it's comics, and
no one dies in comics.
He actually, which in the Sandman universe stuff I love, his son is who is now the Lord of the Dreaming, Daniel, which is random. And I feel like that's not, is that brought up in DC continuity at all ever?
Yeah, it was just in one of their last big events, Metal. He shows up to give Batman a dream. But that's canon, my friend. You don't have to like it, but it's in there.
I can't read those books. Are you reading those still for just sheer like pain?
No. It's for work.
For work. Yeah. Oh yeah, so you
work
can recommend
is hard
them.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I have a coworker and the only
Do it
thing
for the love.
Scott Snyder Batman stuff and he has a
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
I like Dark Knight too.
The Dark Knight.
The movie.
yeah, I feel like
that's the transition of like, oh man, I want to read a cool Batman book.
I like
The Dark Knight and Batman
I like
Begins.
Black Mirror and I like Court of Owls.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Should we
let's move into the next book?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Woman.
All right.
Which Ram V started on issue 25 and has wrote through 27. He did do guest spots before. I gotta say, my first favorite thing is he's moved her back to Gotham, and he's made this a gritty criminal noir book. That's about Catwoman taking back Alleytown and cleaning up the drugs. And Fernando Blanco and Ivan Placencia's art is just incredible in this. I think it's a real flow, and I just like her. I mean, there's so many things to say, like, by the book. I like her relationship with Detective Hadley. I like that we're out of Villahermosa. And I like that this is just a down and gritty, literal noir book. It's not a superhero book. It's a noir book.
And it's very straight-up Batman universe. Like, it doesn't feel like it's just, like, a spinoff. It feels just Batman.
Yeah.
It feels like... Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's pretty amazing to me that Gotham has people that live there, because it has such terribly named areas to live in. Like, oh, this is Alleytown, and that over there is Slaughter Swamp, and like, this is Crime Alley. It's like,
Crime Alley.
Oh boy, like, yeah, like, but where's the pot? There's nowhere that's like bright, clean, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, you'd think they would have some opposing named place that all the people would want to live, but I have to live in Alleytown. But
yeah,
I just
like,
want to throw that out there. That,
there's got to be like a Gotham Manhattan that's like,
yeah, like a real
some really nice name to it.
Yeah,
or it could just be named like not Slaughter Town.
Yeah, it's Safetyville.
Yeah.
Blanco's art adds a real noir element to it too.
It does. It reminded me a lot of kind of reminded me a lot of like Michael Lark Gotham Central almost, as far as like style.
Oh, and I am mistaken. Valencia's brother, FCO Valencia, not Ivan. They both color. That is my mistake. It is FCO Plasencia that does the colors on this, not Ivan. Even Ivan just did the book this week, Other History of DC Universe, which was really good too. But and then the thing I love is he introduces this new, just hard-boiled villain, this hitman, Father Valley. It's totally that typical like hitman, but in a noir kind of crime way. You know, quoting
character design's awesome.
Scripture.
Quoting scripture, and his character design is awesome.
He's like, yeah. He guises as a Bible salesman and dresses in this super cryptic, like crazy outfit.
Do you guys remember Johnny Mnemonic?
Dolph
Lundgren played that the priest that was also the hired killer, and he had a knife that was a crucifix.
Yes.
The only thing I'm remembering right now is psychic dolphins.
That was a wild part too. But if we get that in Catwoman, dolphins. But this Father Valley felt like a cooler looking version of that dude from Johnny. Like when he started quoting scripture, or when he asks Penguin, this is one of my favorite interactions of this whole thing, was when Penguin hires him because Catwoman has been pissing off mobs and criminals left and right. She's stolen all of their ill-gotten gains after the events of Joker War. She's setting up shop, and she's taken down the biggest, baddest boys in Alleytown. So Penguin has hired Father Valley to take her out, and when he requests the other item, and he hands him the Bible, and he's like, what are you going to do with that? And he quotes the scripture to him about basically the Roman scripture, I think it was. And Penguin, there's that beat on Penguin's face of being like, oh, you're one of those guys. Like, yeah, like that moment of like, wow, this dude is too weird for Penguin even. Like,
I hired a nut job. Yeah.
I liked definitely. I was going to say that reminded me of, I was watching Peaky Blinders recently, and there's like a scene in that where Arthur, the crazy brother that's like ultra violent, he like turns Christian, and he's sitting there with like the Jewish gang boss, and he's trying to like provoke him and like make him explain why he murders people but is Christian. And he like says this Bible quote, and it's like, it's Old Testament. And he's like, that's fucking terrifying. You kill people in the name of God.
shout out to the art and flow of issue 26, between which the scene Jack is talking about earlier about how gritty it was, showing meth pipes and stuff. The layout of Gotham City from it. Page 7 to page 8, I just find those kind of layouts great, like showing all the connective city and then how all the drugs are flowing through the city.
Yeah.
And also notice the Kubrick District, which is Rambee's little... Because every Batman or, you know, Gotham writer adds a street named after, usually a comic book creator, but now I love that he has now put Kubrick District on there.
I love that
page. I really like that too.
And how they set it up like with the they overlaid the like white grid so that it looks like it's all, so I guess it's all like separate panels where they have the writing going through it. And it also just I think really helps you view it less as like a map and more as a story piece.
Yeah, like yeah. a flow context
to why they're showing it. Yeah. That felt very Ocean's-y to me, which I love. Yeah. Like whenever there's a heist book or a heist movie, I need that cool overlay of like, let me lay out the score. This guy's in charge. They move it through there. Also, dirty cops on the payroll. Like all my favorite elements of noir are here, but a little bit brighter and a little bit Dickensian.
That might be why 26 is my favorite of the three so far, because it is so much like Ocean's. Like, have they arise at the scene of what Selena's already done, and then we see all the info she gets from Hadley, and then her make her plans and actually then do the heist that he's arriving at.
Yeah.
And like, that flow art is amazing too, when it's just Catwoman just decimating all these people at the drug and car impoundment lot.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. I really enjoyed watching a plan be executed and enacted. But I also really love Catwoman positioning herself as the new sort of dodger, I guess, of Alleytown, right? Like, she's brought in these grifters over goons, or trying to change people from just being thugs to being, like, artistes of crime.
Mentioning that, I really like the Alleytown kids, especially, what is it, Shoes? The one with the blue hair, and she just loves playing Game Boy and riding around on a skateboard.
You know I love girls with blue hair, yeah. Blue, she's awesome. Oh, torn up fishnets?
Yeah, and Skidmark, which I hope is for the bike, and not for anything else more embarrassing.
That's what, I mean, my brother rides a bike a lot, and I call him Skidmark to fuck with him, so I could imagine that.
Yeah.
And Skidmark was such a vital part of that Ocean's, like, heist going down.
Yeah.
Working together. And then even into the next issue with the switched vans.
Yeah.
Which felt very Italian jobby, which is awesome.
I love that, like, they...
I'm not... Never in a negative am I bringing up these comparisons. She, like, only positives,
broke down
guys.
How the general plan was going to work. And then you got to see all the details pan out, and like the twists of stuff that you didn't know that she intended on happening was set into motion.
Yeah.
I also, I loved the, after that execution, when the cops and Hadley, Riggs and Hadley arrive on the scene and they find the dirty cop there and he's like, what are you guys doing here? I'm GCPD. And they're like, whoa, GCPD, what are you doing here? And then he's like, I was following evidence from my case to this place here. What are you doing here? And he's like, oh, yeah, me too. I got a CI told me that there's stuff going down.
He's all standing there in a Hawaiian shirt.
Totally. Yeah, he looked like such a scumbag. Like, part of me was like, of course, this guy's the fucking dirty cop. Look at him. Shirt open, fedora on, or some sort of, I don't know.
He's trying to, like,
hangout hat.
Super awkwardly explain his way out of it.
Yeah. I was like, what is he going to do after he finishes this heist? Go to, like, a dad bar and try to pick up on chicks? Like, hey, I'm a dirty cop that makes a lot of money. Did you see this Hawaiian shirt? It's real Tommy Bahama. Well, they probably don't have Tommy Bahama in the DC universe. It'd be like, it's a real Bruce Wayne tropical collection or something.
So are we going to talk about the Robin Hood kind of feel that she was going for? She's like, she robbed all this money with the criminal dudes, with like Penguin and the
and
Riddler.
Then gave
and
it then away.
Took it from them.
Yeah.
And then just gave it to the poor and needy. And for some reason that you guys probably know, gave a bunch of it to Bruce Wayne.
Oh, it was Bruce Wayne's money. There was a bit in the Joker War before that where the underbroker, who is like the illicit money man for all the crime, when you need to store your money or you want it to like go into some cool hedge fund, you call the underbroker. worked with the Joker and they stole all of Bruce Wayne's fortune. So the Joker had access to all of, like, the Batman money and tools and stuff. So she stole that back and gave it to the Foxes, who have sort of always run Wayne Enterprises and helped Bruce with his inventions. But she also stole the criminals' money, and that's what she gave back. Because so essentially they took it from them.
The underbroker is a super launderer and has super Swedish bank accounts.
Yeah, I actually think that he's one of the most interesting, like, super criminals, because I'm certain that everything that he's doing is probably in a weird way legal.
And it's
like he wears a mask and a cool suit.
People are actually doing.
Yeah, exactly. That's the part where it, like, really gets me, is like they created this great villainous character that on, like, the initial look at him being like, oh, he's just John Travolta in that first Thomas Jane Punisher. He's just like a money laundering bad guy. This is lame. I don't like this. But the more you think about him, the more evil he becomes when you realize that he's probably not even breaking any laws. He's just moving it from the Cayman account to the Swiss account, or he's investing it into, I don't know, some cool account that'll match the market, and in 10 years you'll have doubled your money. Some, like, Warren Buffett style, you know, insider trading.
So looking at him now,
where it's like, it shouldn't be legal, but it is.
He's like Warren Buffett and Red Skull had a baby.
Yeah. I could. I put that there.
I put that there as well.
I'd call him the Red Buffet.
that sounds Red like
no,
a really
Warren Skull.
All you can eat Chinese buffet.
Yeah, it does. It's like all Mongolian. Or bust. Yeah. But yeah, so that I thought was pretty interesting. Her Robin Hood part of her is still there, but I do think that it's a weird juxtaposition with how hard she's going as, like, I'm the boss of Alleytown. I'm gonna fuck some people up. I'm gonna bust up operations.
Part of that also, is like her feeling like an obligation to show the kids how it's done out there in Alleytown. Go back to her roots. And I feel like part of the Robin Hood thing is just justification for her to go and do whatever she wants without moral...
Yeah, commit more crimes.
Yeah, without moral quandary.
Yeah, like her being able to do what she loves to do and has a passion for, which is stealing, but, you know, teaching these kids to get better and be raised kind of how she was in Alleytown, which came out of an orphanage in her backstory. And I think it's, really a lot of it is just building the town back, giving them this money so that they can have better lives and get off the drugs.
I really liked, in the going back to the first issue again, I really liked all the metaphors with this ongoing dance with a tiger.
Oh, man. Placencia's art and, like, the coloring in that was incredible.
That scene kicks off his run so well, of her performing that heist while having the art and Placencia's color, just with her basically, you know, what would you call that? Like what a matador does with a bull, but with a tiger. And her just being able to evade the tiger while she's completing her heist was such a good analogy of what was going on during the heist scenes. It was a perfect way to introduce his series.
I like where it's... So I'm looking at the pages now. I like how it says, you know how this dance goes. A step here, then a step there. Flitting in the place between failure and virtuosity. And then the next scene is her ducking through lasers.
Yeah.
It's like
it was really, really solid juxtaposition.
You're this quote unquote dance that you're doing is like on the line of life and death, and her going through these lasers is what's like stopping her from getting busted by the police or these bad guys or whatever and getting eaten by the tiger.
Yes. Definitely.
But the tiger's gotta eat at some point. And I like that it establishes a good solid, like, sort of ticking clock over her head the minute that we see Hadley follow her from Villa Hermosa on the beautiful West Coast.
Cat's got nine lives.
Back to the dreary East Coast city of Gotham, I'm guessing. It's got to be East Coast, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like New York, isn't it?
It's New York.
Gotham is
Or is it like Chicago?
It's New York or Chicago, definitely.
Because what's Batman Metropolis? Detroit. Yeah, I could see it being Detroit. Better
it could
Detroit.
Be Detroit also. Right.
It's like if New York and Detroit had a baby.
I always had a feeling that like Gotham and Metropolis are both supposed to capture New York from like the two different like sides of it. Mm. Like Superman obviously is on like the happy-go-lucky sunshine side of it, and Batman's more like the gritty, dark alleys.
New York in the daytime when you feel safe is when Superman's around. And New York at nighttime when you're worried about what's around the corner is when you pray Batman is around.
So yeah, I, on our final notes, I think this is definitely the way Catwoman needs to go. She's back to her roots, and it also feels like it's similar to the Brubaker run we'll be talking about in the near future. That is just got such a noir element to it. And I can't wait to see her build back up Alleytown and commit all sorts of more heists with Hadley.
And hopefully have some interaction, some big confrontation with Father Valley.
We know that's coming.
Oh, yeah. But I just want to see it be real badass.
I'm not going to lie. She has a serious, like, Matrix Trinity kind of aesthetic going there.
Oh, she definitely does. She's definitely, with her whole outfit.
The leather suit and the sleek glasses. And even just the way she, like, jumps off the buildings, which is very Catwoman, but also,
I love about this run also, one last thing I want to say about it, is how much she takes off her mask when she's dealing with these people, which was never really the thing before. She was always hiding.
Everyone knows who she is. Now in this.
Yeah, everyone's just taking it off, and she's saying, let it be known.
Everyone knows
she
her
is.
By name, seems like.
Yeah, the new queen of Alleytown.
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. To Alleytown. And they'll always steal your stuff. Alleytown.
That's the new...
It doesn't flow as good as Cheers, but it's something.
That's the new tourist jingle.
You might find a boy there stealing your rim, and you might adopt him, and then we'll get killed.
You guys are really selling Alleytown in a great way.
Come back.
Makes me want to go.
No, but it's on the up and up, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I'm worried... What if this ultimately leads to she fights Father Valley, maybe they win, maybe they run off, whatever. But then she's got to fight the even bigger enemy, right? They're going to push her out of Alleytown through gentrification.
No.
Which, not gentrification again.
That is a really common theme with Ram's work.
Yes, it is. It is a common theme.
About how the poor get pushed out. They get churned up and chewed down by the city. And then here comes progress.
She has
and
to
tomorrow.
Fight the real evil that is Bruce Wayne being a billionaire. He might be Batman, but he's still a billionaire.
Yeah.
Shorter husband, Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll use the proceeds of her heists and her... taking out of the criminal element, but leaving her own in place, right? To gentrify it herself.
True.
I
don't know.
Maybe she's her own corner cat shop, you know, the cat's milk coffee shop.
Yeah.
In every corner.
Start a chain.
Yeah.
And then that'll be like the perfect place for her to fence stuff. It'll be like in a video game where you need to sell something, so you got to go to the shop that's aligned with your dude. Because they'll buy all your illicit goods.
Well, it only makes sense that you have like a fence network set up.
Yeah, not only can you get a creamy milk, you know, milk creamy latte, you can also get a couple of diamonds.
Yeah.
In your bag.
That's the secret. When you order it half calf, it comes with the other half diamonds.
Hipster artisan coffee money laundering scheme. It seems like a lot of those hipster coffee places
notary inside
have
also.
To be like laundering schemes or something, because some of them are crazy overpriced.
Yeah, you're not going to make that much money off coffee alone.
Especially if it's like $10
Final
a cup.
Thoughts on
anyway.
Catwoman.
Two paws up from this guy over here. I love the gritty noir feeling, the excitement of heist being executed well, and the technical skill in both the artist and the writer, in both Ram and Fernando's sort of ability to lay out this really complex plan in a way that's fun and clear and streamlined, but still exciting because, like Jack was saying, there's still those twists to every heist. There's always that big trump card or reveal card. I shouldn't say trump card. That cool secret flip card of surprise. It was actually this all along. So, well, super well done. Really, really liking where this one's going.
I agree, and I gotta say that the noir and grit and the flow with the art is my favorite parts. As you were saying, it's so streamlined and it's engaging and entertaining to read. It gets you right into that, as a heist book should be, involving criminals.
I gotta say, I was not expecting a Catwoman book to have me so eagerly anticipating future issues.
Yeah, I am hooked back on the Catwoman. I want to see what happens next.
Especially with that
like
ending.
Like a cat waiting at the saucer.
With the last issue, it really leaves a lot to anticipate.
Yeah, especially that big locker. I'm not going to say what it is, because I want everybody listening to go pick these issues up, because they're good.
Oh, yeah.
They're damn good. So now we move to the Legend of Swamp Thing, which Ram V has the beginning and end of, and he curated it because he is taking over Swamp Thing. He has a Swamp Thing Future State book coming out, and then his own Swamp Thing solo title, which I'm really excited about, especially if it keeps Mike Perkins as the artist. But there's also many other tales in this book written by people like Philip Kennedy Johnson, Vita Ayala, James Tynion IV, and Julian Little, who's usually a manga writer, I found out. And that kind of makes sense with that story, what it's about. But right off the bat, just the entrance to the Great Dismal Swamp in Virginia, I feel transported to just an all-feeling gothic Halloween vibe. And basically Swamp Thing having to retrieve this child from the old mother Willow Tree, and I'm about to have a daughter named Willow, and it was great to see designed by Mike Perkins. And it starts off, you know, this story of him deciding, basically telling her stories to let go of the boy. So, because she's basically trying to save the boy from the troubles of life and what he'll have to go through. And in it, he then, because Swamp Thing's become this avatar of the green, tells the Willow Tree many stories that transcend time, including a really awesome one from Philip Kennedy Johnson, which has him at Stonehenge, which was a really cool story called Ring of Stones. And also Age of Discovery was another one I thought was interesting by Tynion, that was set in the future and kind of off on these. Was it in the future or they
no,
just
it's in the past.
It's in the past. It is in the past. You were right. It's sailing on ships, and they
it's
find
like
this
conquistadors island. Almost.
Yeah, it's like conquistadors, and the actual island itself is basically like Swamp Thing.
Before we continue, I just wanted to say, and of course, we're recording this early, so you can take some time off for your baby. But as we're recording this, you're having your baby tomorrow, correct? So
we're going tomorrow to induce.
Congratulations, dude. I'm really stoked for you.
Yeah, congrats, man.
Thank you. I'm really excited.
To say congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate it from all you guys. The most excited I've ever been. And I can't wait to have our beautiful baby girl pop out, which tomorrow from 8 p.m. on. We'll be seeing how long it takes for her to come, but she's coming.
Wait to, and you got to FaceTime me with my little god niece.
I will definitely FaceTime
god niece.
Oh, a little Michael.
They said we can FaceTime in the hospital, which That was one thing, because only one person's allowed in with her, and that's me. And we don't have to wear masks, which is cool, but I can FaceTime whoever I want. So there'll be lots of FaceTiming with people and sending people pictures.
If you need moral support, too, while you're waiting, drop a call.
Yeah, I'm fingers crossed everything is going to go swell, which I think it will. And, yeah, I can't wait to be a father and raise her on I want to raise her on, like, David Attenborough documentaries and Carl Sagan Cosmos. Have her start watching that, like, 3 or 4 years old. Do the opposite so we don't get any Peppa Pig or
please, no more
Baby
Peppa
Shark.
Pig.
No, yeah, that, her sister, nope, her sister did that with her child. So we want to do Disney stuff and then learning stuff. I mean, maybe she can be like the quantum physicist that discovers the nature of our reality if I get her on that Carl Sagan at 3 years old.
Oh, yeah.
It's processing information.
Just don't accidentally raise like a little Marxist or anything.
This is obviously much shorter.
Okay, so
this is much shorter, and Ram's part in it is really kind of introducing his take on Swamp Thing and how he has connections to all of this past Swamp Thing avatars of the Green, which I hope in his solo series we'll get to see more of. Maybe not just be focused on one time or one Swamp Thing, but maybe avatars throughout history. And also just the complete design. Mike Perkins is just crushing it. It is a Swamp Thing artist. He's perfect. And the design of the Mother Willow Tree is awesome. And the way it wraps up is so nice. His first tale is about him telling the Willow Tree these stories to release the boy. And then the last tale is years later when the boy's an old man. And basically, him, you know, his life is due to Swamp Thing. And he did go through ups and downs as the Mother Willow Tree was worried. But he also had families and joy and all these things that wouldn't have been possible if Swamp Thing didn't bring him back from the swamp. Which I thought was a really nice and fitting way, as Ram V does so well. He hits you with those emotions. And I think a lot of his work is about life and the experiences we all kind of go through together in this journey. And it makes me really excited for, I love Swamp Thing. I don't think he's had a solid book for a very long time. And I mean very long, I mean 30 years, maybe.
Brutal.
20 years. So I'm not a fan of that Snyder one, man. But
oh, I wasn't even thinking that one. That one was good, but there was like, there's a pretty solid, like, Joshua Desart run.
Maybe I missed out on Desart.
Brian K. Vaughan did a run that was all about his daughter. It was all about, yeah, it was all about.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. I'm misquoting. I didn't even know Brian K. Vaughan wrote a Swamp Thing book.
Yeah. There's some pretty interesting stuff in that middle era, sort of when Vertigo was ebbing and flowing.
I gotta check that out then. Maybe I misspoke, but I feel like Ram V really has the power to really do what you can do with Swamp Thing. Except there was, no, that's not true. There was that great Tom King one-shot story, which was wonderful.
And emotional.
And very emotional.
Yeah.
That was a really good Swamp Thing run. But main thing of Legend of Swamp Thing, because it's not just Ram, definitely buy it. Every story, and it's interesting. I think it's going to give everyone an idea of what Ram Swamp Thing is going to be like. And I think it's probably my favorite Halloween special they've done in a while. The Sins of Sinister House was pretty good. But I think this one kind of takes the cake. All the art is fantastic in it, and every single tale. And every single one kind of has a moral, including the beginning and ending. And Ram curating all this and creating this perfect Halloween special for the most Halloween of DC characters is just a great read. I recommend you getting it.
It's
fantastic. If you're a Swamp,
Halloween is my favorite holiday. Yeah. So I'm always
mine
into
too.
Some Halloween specials.
Yeah, this is a Swamp Thing as it should be. And I can't wait to see him write about him in the future state and then write about him in the future. I would love a closing notes of DC work. I mean, this was kind of short, so just I agree all you guys love this special.
Yeah. Actually, I was only going to point out that if you read the Age of Discovery one, Christian Ward did so much work with the paneling that you can see Swamp Thing's face hidden throughout different panels. Like,
that's the Tinian one. Yeah.
Yeah.
His art is incredible throughout that.
But I'm saying, like, the very first opening panel, he's got, like, a little tent up. But behind him are these two, like, branches that sort of create eyes, and then the tent makes that little cool V, upside down V that Swamp
Thing
always
has. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But then, like, a few pages later, it's all broken down onto these eight where they found this, like, fucking flower covered man, and they're freaking out. Everybody on this island is losing their shit because the jungle keeps changing and they don't know what's happening. But it looks like they're in a cave. There's two eyes, and then there's that same mouth pattern as they're, like, swallowed by this darkness.
It's
super impressive.
The tree too. You can see the Swamp Thing on the top of the island like a cave. He's at the bottom of the tree.
Yeah. So
it just works it into every single place.
I agree that I think Rams 2, the bookends to this, were the strongest, especially with Mike Perkins on that sort of darker art as well. But it does really showcase what Swamp Thing can be, what stories you could tell with the character of Swamp Thing.
Age of Discovery and Ring of Stones were my other two favorites, which were really good and interesting as well.
So bringing it back and leading out of the DC work by Ram V, I really want to say that being on this show and doing this writer pick of Ram V, I've grown to really have an appreciation for his work and see how it's all got a very Ram style. And I was happily surprised to see how well that translated over to his DC work. I was afraid that it was going to be, he would have a lot less like creative freedom over there working on DC books, but it's very distinctly him with like the very wordy and metaphorical approach and very imaginative world building.
I agree. And, you know, I love shout-outs to a few DC books that came out this week. The Other History of the DC Universe, written by Oscar-winning screenwriter John Ridley, is fantastic. It's all prose, and it's just an awesome journey of Jefferson Pierce struggle through adversity and trying to clean up his neighborhood and being, you know, treated the way he was as being as more of a hoodlum until he's accepted as a hero and then only taken kind of by Justice League to be like their token, you know, African-American. And just, it's not even a very happy tale, but it's so well written. It's all prose, and the art by Giuseppe Caminacoli. Andrea Cucci, they do the finishes and layouts. And then Ivan Placencia, FCO's brother, who we were just talking about, did the colors for that. And it's a fantastic DC book. I can't recommend enough picking it up. We'll do a little catch up here on just other books we've read. Also this week, I Walk With Monsters came out. It's incredible. It's about a girl who's using her monster friend to hunt predators, mostly sexual predators, because she was abused and her brother was basically, it's hinted at, was her father into sexual trafficking to a politician, and she's trying to find them and using her, I wouldn't call him a wolf man, but monster man friend to lure in these predators and then completely devour them. And it's just, it's a lot of great fun.
Yeah, the design of the monster is so good, too. It's sort of got that Japanese many eyes element that was present in a Dracula motherfucker.
Yes, definitely. I love the design of the monster.
Yeah.
Also, like, Hellblazer, Spurrier's End Run is, that's definitely the best Hellblazer run of the decade. It's 12 perfect issues. Everything wraps up. I'm glad they were able to do that with getting their time cut short. So that made me happy that it was such a perfect and complete run. And that's just one of the best books of the year. It's definitely going to be on the top this year with a few other books, but maybe DC's best book released all year. Sad not enough people bought it. And the Perhaponauts, which if you're a fan of bedtime stories or urban legends, the first issue has a squad of a Mothman, Bigfoot, a ghost, a telepath, and an interdimensional traveler basically taking on the finding out and discovering the Kentucky Goblins, which is a well-known urban legend or story told, which has been on bedtime stories. Pretty much every character in Perhaponauts has been told on bedtime stories, which is a great YouTube channel. And they also in the back matter have a whole cryptid guide to the cryptids that they're using and from different regions where they're from and their inspiration is from. It's a great read. Anything else you guys want to shout out or promote?
This week I've picked up the Osiris Path graphic novel from Behemoth Comics. Behemoth has been like super hot, high on my favorites list lately. They've been putting out a lot of good quality, crazy content. And this one was pretty cool. It's about a secret moon project. The archaeologist has to go up to this moon base because they're found some really cool discoveries, but they're beset by these all of like enemies that have existed. So it's got these really neat sort of Cold War spy thriller elements of like two factions of government that found this big secret and they both took it different ways, mixed with like this Indiana Jones adventure vibe, plus they're in space. So it's pretty rad. I dug it a lot.
You've made me now interested in Behemoth since your post about it.
Yeah, they're pretty good, man. That Hotline Miami book is solid. They did a Girl Walks Home Alone at Night adaptation, which was really good. The Cardinal Dagon one that I was reading was super solid. The art was real crazy. So, like, so far I have not read one where I was like, oh, no, not for me. So they're up there. If you're looking for good quality indie comics, check out Behemoth.
I might have to hit you up the LCS about it.
Well, these are all terrific books that we've been talking about and hyping up. We hope that you all go out there, grab them, and enjoy them, and give us a follow on Twitter. We are found at Outside The, put an O or a zero instead of the O at the front there. You can follow us individually on most social media. I am at Chaz Simons. You guys are?
I am at PoetAir33.
And I am at sin_aesthetics with an X.
So make sure to check us out, give us follows, and go ahead and check out our friends over at Nerds From on Twitter. They're putting out some new content as well that's pretty exciting. But yeah, make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe, and share us to your friends. If you're liking what you're hearing, spread the word. And if you're not, keep it to yourself.
Don't forget to tell your friends to tell their friends' friends.
So a lot of good quality stuff heading your way. Make sure that you follow us for all the hot news as it goes live and launches.
And you all have a great day. Be good to each other out there. Love yourself and love others. And as always, Chaz,
stay safe and wash your hands.
Love and life, folks. Thank you for listening.